The Czech Republic has links with India going back to long before both countries won independence. In this program, in our occasional series, In Their Own Words, we look at Czech-Indian connections through music, literature, geopolitics, and even yoga. A short extract from The Wandering Madman by the great Czech composer Leoš Janáček. In a short while we'll be finding out what connects this piece of music to India. But we'll start our journey into Czech-Indian relations in the present day.
The Czechs know yoga. Every second Czech is doing yoga. So that is a very big soft power of India that you find in the Czech Republic.
That is the former Indian ambassador to the Czech Republic, Narinda Chauhan, when she came to talk to Radio Prague International in 2020.
And there are yoga studios just about everywhere in the Czech Republic. You ask, every second person is doing yoga.
But it certainly isn't just yoga that Czechs associate with India.
In your textbooks, this is something very nice that happens in the Czech Republic. Your textbooks tell you about colonial India. They tell you about the contribution of Mahatma Gandhi to the world philosophical thought. And India in the Czech Republic is associated with Mahatma Gandhi. India is Mahatma Gandhi, and Mahatma Gandhi is India. The philosophy of Gandhi is associated with India. And recently, when we celebrated 150 years of the birthday of Mahatma Gandhi, the Czech Republic was one of those few rare European Union countries that brought out a special commemorative stamp to celebrate 150 years of the Mahatma.
As far as we know, Mahatma Gandhi never visited Czechoslovakia, but this country does have a very strong connection with his contemporary, the great Bengali poet Rabindranath Tagore, who was the first non-European to win the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1913. When I made a short documentary about the poet in 2011, I started in one of Prague's inner suburbs.
I'm in Takurova Street in Prague 6, which is well known in the city as it houses many of the buildings of Prague's Technical University. Now, Takurova Street is named after the Indian poet Rabindranath Tagore. And just in front of me here is a bust of the poet. He's portrayed as a bearded figure, as we know him from portraits in his later life. And there's an inscription with his name, and it also says, Bengali artist, philosopher and theoretician, born the 6th of May 1861, died the 7th of August 1941. The reason why there's a bust of Tagore here is because he had a very special relationship to Czechoslovakia.
I went on to speak to Dr. Dušan Zbavitel, who is the Czech Republic's foremost scholar of Tagore's poetry. Professor Zbavitel was already 86, but he still spoke with immense enthusiasm and energy about the poet.
Tagore was not only a poet and a writer. He was, one can say, a Renaissance personality in this respect that he was a great composer. He founded a new style of Indian music called Rabindra Sangeet, which is still popular in India. He was a great painter. He was also a pedagogue and so on. He even founded an agricultural school.
A deep humanism runs through Tagore's work, along with a pervading sense of optimism, two qualities that appealed strongly to many writers, artists and intellectuals in the newly emerging Czechoslovak Republic after World War I. Professor Zbavitel reminded me that the links with India that eventually led to Tagore's two visits to Czechoslovakia take us back over 200 years.
The knowledge of Indian languages is very, very old in Czech countries. For instance, some so-called enlighteners of the beginning of the 19th century knew and studied Sanskrit, Dobrovsky, Jungmann, and other personalities considered it a duty to get acquainted with Sanskrit. So the tradition of the interest in India was in our country very old and very vivid. I don't know what was the reason of this, nobody knows, but we consider it that India was very sympathetic for Czech people as a country under a foreign rule. It was English colony until 1947, and Czech was still the Third World War under Austria-Hungary, so there were these mutual sympathies, yeah? And our people also very much followed the fight of India for freedom, for political freedom.
The father of Indian studies in Prague was Vincenz Lesný, who in the first half of the 20th century built up the study of Indian languages at the Charles University, along with Moritz Vinternitz from Prague's German University. Lesný became a good friend of Tagore, and both he and Vinternitz were invited to India to lecture at the Vishwa Bharati University that Tagore set up in Bengal. Lesný was also responsible for the two visits that Tagore paid to Prague in the 1920s. Among the many Czechs who went to hear him speak was the composer Leoš Janáček.
He came twice to Prague. He came in May 1921 only to Prague. He did not visit any other town because his visit was rather short. But during this short visit, he delivered two public lectures, one of them in Lucerna, which was completely sold out, and his lecture was very well received. That's when Janáček met him. Janáček wrote at that time for our Lidové noviny, such a column as he used to do, in which he put down the intonation of Tagore's recitation of Bengali poetry.
Tagore's language, here in a rare recording of the poet himself, inspired Janáček to compose one of his best-known choral pieces, the Potulný šílenec, the Wandering Madman, for male choir and soprano solo, which puts a story from Tagore's book The Gardener to music. There is little evidence of Tagore himself having taken a particular interest in Czech music and literature, but he was very actively interested in political life in Czechoslovakia, especially in the face of growing extremism in Europe.
He was considered by everybody here, nearly everybody, as an ambassador of peace and understanding between nations, between states. This was his message. He was the first president of the Indian League Against Fascism, a great enemy of Nazism and Hitler and Mussolini and so on. And that's why also his works were not allowed to be published during the Second World War, yeah, when we had the protectorate here.
On Christmas Eve 1937, the celebrated Czech writer Karel Čapek sent a message over the airwaves to Tagore in Shantiniketan in Bengal, and at the same time, the inventor of the arc lamp, František Křižík, sent a message to Einstein in Princeton, a gesture of solidarity among democratic nations, all broadcast live to Czechoslovak radio listeners. This is the only surviving recording that features Čapek's voice.
All Czechoslovak stations, calling British India, Shantiniketan University. Karel Čapek is addressing a message of goodwill and understanding to Rabindranath Tagore, Shantiniketan.
Mit Sepakure, harmonický hlase východu, zdravíme vás se vašem Shantiniketanu. Zdravíme vás Československa, kde nyní padá sníh.
To you who are the harmonious voice of the East, we send our greetings to Shantiniketan. We send our greetings from Czechoslovakia, where the snow is already falling, from an anxious Europe in the Western world, where even the most highly developed nations are unable to shake each other's hands as brothers would. Regardless of the great distance between our countries, however, we stretch out our hands in brotherly love to you, the poet of wisdom, to you, quiet Shantiniketan, to you, great India, to you, mighty Asia, even to this Asia which is now being destroyed by arms discovered by the West. At this very moment when cannons are roaring against the east and west of our common continent, our Western democracy feebly calls out to you at the turning point of the year. Long live the world, but let it be a world of equal and free people.
Tagore himself sent a telegram in return, which was read out in English on air.
Friends in Czechoslovakia, in the terrible storm of hatred, violence raging over humanity, accept at the goodwill of an old idealist who clings to his faith in the common destiny of the East and West and all people on the earth.
When a few months later Czechoslovakia was carved up under the Munich Agreement, Tagore spoke out in defense of the country.
At the time of the Munich crisis in 1938, he wrote an open letter to the Federal Press, which was also published in English and American newspapers, in which he condemned Nazism and also Western democracies for betraying us. And he expressed in this letter his hope that our country will regain its freedom. Unfortunately, this letter came only when the German influence was so strong in Czech that the letter was not allowed to be published. And the Czech readers were able to read it only in 1945, after the deliberation of Czechoslovakia.
Rabindranath Tagore did not live long enough to see Czechoslovakia liberated from Nazi Germany. He died in Kolkata on August 7, 1941, at the age of 80. After the war, Czechoslovakia's communist regime was initially deeply suspicious of his legacy, but thanks largely to the persistence of Dušan Zbavitel, some of Tagore's poems were republished in the mid-1950s, and interest in the great Indian writer has continued ever since. Right up to his death in 2012, Dr. Zbavitel continued to write about the poet who first inspired his love for India when he was a teenager, and to translate his poetry.
In translating his poetry, one great advantage has been that structure of the Czech language and the Bengali language is very similar. You see, we have very similar sounds, and also the structure of the verse is very similar, so that it was not so difficult to translate it. I even made an experiment in this way. Tagore put many of his poems into songs by giving them the melody. So I tried to translate these very songs as such in such a way that it could be sung also on these melodies. But of course, this Indian music and even Tagore's music is different from the European one and never got many listeners in Europe.
In the period between the two world wars, Czechoslovakia was keen to cultivate trade with India. The most famous example was Tomáš Baťa, usually pronounced Bata in English, the shoe magnate who built the city of Zlín in the east of what is now the Czech Republic. The Baťa company was hugely successful and built factories in many parts of the world. At the beginning of the 1930s, Baťa built the town of Batanagar in Bengal, just outside Kolkata. Here is Ambassador Chauhan again.
Not many people in India are aware that the Bata works that were set up in India in the 1930s, well before we established diplomatic relations with your country, when we were still part of the British India. The Bata works were actually set up by your country. And we all grew up in India thinking that Bata is India. It's actually Czech. And so the Bata works are famous all over the country. I mean, the common man knows Bata.
The Batanagar factory remains to this day one of the largest shoemaking centres in the world. It was also the setting for part of the novel Sound of the Sundial, published in 2001 and written by the Czech novelist Hanna Andronikova. At the time, the writer spoke to Radio Prague about the book and read some extracts.
I would like to read a part which is narrated. I mean, the whole book, I should say that the whole book is narrated by two people, Daniel Kepler and Anne Vanier. And these two people have a dialogue during one night, and they discover, I mean, they slowly reveal the whole story of Daniel Kepler's family. And I'm going to read a part that takes us to 30s. This part is narrated by little Daniel when he's a boy. And his father, Thomas Kepler, comes back to Czechoslovakia to take his wife and his little son to India, where he's working on the construction of the Batya shoe factory. And of course, Thomas Kepler is quite enthusiastic about India, and he's hoping that his wife is going to like it there. So this is the part. She didn't like it in India at all. She saw the dirt, the mouldering walls of the houses, litter floating in the sludge. It made her feel sick, the putrid stench wafting towards her. The dozens of curs and cats running around, hairless and mangy. She went into fits when she saw crippled children lying in the dust of the street, beggars with hands stretched out. She suffered from phobias about dirt and disease. She couldn't bear the naked face of reality, the raw shape of misery, sickness and dying. The day she saw her first snake, she wanted to go home. Mother India, land of an ancient culture mysterious and inscrutable, broad rivers of rolling yellowy-grey water, silent and everlasting. India.
In the end, Raquel falls in love with India. India wasn't going to change for her sake. India had remained the same for thousands of years. It was Raquel who changed. She let herself be carried away by extremes and by the abundance of destinies. She fell in love with India. So that is a Czech writer at the beginning of the 21st century depicting India in the 1930s. But the inspiration works both ways. I'll move on to an Indian writer who lived for the best part of 10 years in Czechoslovakia. His name was Nirmal Varma, and he was one of the most important writers in Hindi of the post-war literary generation.
In 1959, he came to Czechoslovakia to learn Czech and translate Czech literature into Hindi.
The Indian writer and journalist Ashutosh Bhardwaj has been researching into Nirmal Varma's life, and I spoke to him in the spring of 2023, when he was on a two-month stay in Prague on the invitation of Prague City Library.
And now you would be surprised to know, more surprised because hardly anybody here in Czech Republic knows about him, that he translated writers like Kundera and Čapek into Hindi much before they were available in English. So he exposed us, he introduced Czech writers to the Hindi world before they had moved to, say, England or France or westwards in Europe. He also wrote several important works which are located in Czechoslovakia, including his first novel, which was based in Prague.
Tell us more about the novel.
So it's his first novel. Its title in Hindi is Vedin. In English, it's Days of Yearning. And it's available in Czech as well. On surface, it's about a short-lived romance between an Indian student who is studying in Prague and a woman from Vienna, who is a decade or maybe slightly more, maybe 15 years older to him. And there's a brief romance between them for 3 or 4 days. But if you scratch the surface, it's about the post-war trauma which Europe, particularly this part of Europe, Central Europe, was reeling under at that time. So you come across characters like Raina, the woman protagonist, who had been in a concentration camp. There are several other protagonists who have their own horror stories, and they are unable to come out of it.
Besides living in Czechoslovakia for a decade and writing about this country, he was actually highly influential, wasn't he, in the history of writing in Hindi?
Nirmal is among the most influential writers in Hindi literature, and also because he had deep interest in Indian literature as well. So he is a sort of a pan-Indian phenomena. The people across languages have read him. He has been translated into various other languages. And more importantly, he was among those rare writers who also had, as I said, had an early exposure to the West. In his early age, he begins with communism. Then he comes to the West. He lives in a country which is part of the socialist bloc. Then he faces that reality. Then he goes back to India. Then after certain years, his anti-communist stand, it starts getting even further hardened. And then he goes back. Then it's a long journey. Then he goes back in search of his Indian tradition, Indian roots. Then he takes to the other end of the spectrum. So it's a long and fascinating and complicated and challenging journey that he has taken.
At the time when Nirmal Varma came to Prague, relations between Czechoslovakia and India were close. India had broken away from British colonial rule and cultivated close relations with the Soviet Union and the countries of the Eastern Bloc. Czechoslovakia became the second biggest arms exporter to India after the Soviet Union. As I was looking through the Czech radio archives, I came across one recording that was quite typical for the time. The year is 1957. India has already been independent for a decade, and Czechoslovakia is firmly under the Soviet sphere of influence. The recording was made in New Delhi. Two of my journalism students from the Anglo-American University here in Prague, Kristina Zagordayeva and Valentina Pšeničkova, chose to take a look at the recording as part of their History of Journalism course. We start with Kristina.
My name is Kristina Zagordayeva. I was analyzing this recording in September 1957. Czechoslovakia and India set a quite extended trade agreement, according to which they were cooperating on many issues. And they set an exhibition, Indian government and the Indo-Czechoslovak Association, they set an exhibition in New Delhi about how Czechoslovakia perceives Indian identity.
We hope to be able to present to you and to the citizens of Delhi an idea of the interest that has been evinced in Czechoslovakia in this country of ours.
Valentina, who's actually talking on the recording?
There's the chairman of the Czechoslovak Indo Company, Krishna Rao. And then you have the unknown woman. I had some tips who she could be, but it turned out it's not her.
The exhibition has been arranged under the title India in Czechoslovakia. And I sincerely believe that those sober documentary photographs will show you, at least to some extent, how the Indian philosophy, literature, and art are deeply appreciated in my country.
Then we have the
Minister of Information and Broadcasting.
When I was a student in Europe, I had the occasion to visit once or twice the beautiful country of Czechoslovakia. Just as to large numbers of people in Czechoslovakia or other European countries, India is something very distant and very vague. So it is possible that to a large number of people in this country, Czechoslovakia must be something just on the map. But let me tell my friends in India that Czechoslovakia is one of the most forward and one of the most dynamic centers in Europe that I ever saw. There is no doubt that even before the last war, it was a great intellectual and cultural center.
Did you manage to get a bit of background context into the relationship between India and the countries of the Soviet bloc at the time?
After gaining independence from the British Empire in 1947, they finally established diplomatic relationships, and Czechoslovakia was one of the first countries who would have made these diplomatic agreements. They opened their embassies. And this was quite a sentimental thing for Indians and Czechoslovaks because they were mostly cooperating and united by this feeling of being one country oppressed by another. And especially this trade agreement of 1957 was one of the most important things in re-establishing those close ties between the countries.
Nearly 35 years have gone by since the fall of communism in Czechoslovakia. But today, you can still find a flavour of India in the Czech Republic.
There are more than 75 Indian restaurants in Prague alone. So I'm also a bit surprised how the Czechs, they take to Indian food, which is spicy, which is a completely different flavor. It's cooked differently. Indian food is hugely popular in the Czech Republic. So food is the way to a man's heart.
The musical connection between the Czech Republic and India also continues. Debashish Chowdhury is a hugely admired Indian conductor who has been based in the Czech Republic since the year 2000. He was the first Indian to study at the Prague Conservatory.
It's a journey of discovery that eventually led me to Prague, and I must say quite blindly. I wrote to Prague saying I'd like to study conducting. This is what I've done so far. This is what I have. And they said that you can conduct, learn to conduct as a special student because you already have some experience, you already have some qualifications. And you can concentrate on conducting, but you have to, of course, pass the entrance exams when you come. And one fine day, I find myself standing in front of Prague Conservatory. I don't know why it's Prague. I don't know why it wasn't London, why it wasn't somewhere in England, why it was somewhere in Scandinavia. I don't know. I can't answer that question. But I think it's just fate brought me to this country.
In the course of his time in this country, Debashish Chowdhury has explored the wealth of Czech-Indian musical links. We've already talked about Leoš Janáček's Wandering Madman, which drew from Rabindranath Tagore's collection of poems, The Gardener. But Chowdhury reminds us of another, less well-known connection between the poet and the composer.
He's not only inspired Janáček. If you go to his gravestone in Brno, the quotation is from Tagore on his tombstone. Janáček's from The Gardener. Not many Czechs even know that. I even asked Moravians. So, Janáček's tombstone says this. Where is it from? Which I'm actually going to do the world premiere of this pretty soon, is by J.B. Fester. From Joseph Fester, it's an unpublished, it's never been released. I'm working from the autograph score with the permission of his family. Very lucky to have found this because it's basically the song cycle based on the Gitanjali. So it's the text of Tagore using the German translation which he had at that time, 1914. And the orchestral versions. It's a short song cycle. Now, J.B. Ferrester, again, is a name who a lot of Czechs will know, but he's quite forgotten. His works are not played that much. So this is a short cycle of Ferrester. It's a direct link I finally found with not only India, but Calcutta, my very hometown, and Prague. So that is the Milostný písně. That's a direct link, India, Calcutta, and the Czech Republic.
Debashish Chowdhury conducting the Karlovy Vary Symphony Orchestra with the mezzo-soprano Esther Pavlou with J.B. Förster's Písně Milostné, Love Songs, bringing an end to our Czech-Indian journey, as reflected in the radio archives. Thank you for listening to this programme. From me, David Vaughan, and all of us here at Radio Prague International, until the next time, goodbye.